Thank you for listening to the Damage Report podcast, the show covering the true threats facing our country and what you can actually do about them. You can support this free podcast by leaving us a review and giving us a 5-star rating on Apple Podcasts or wherever you happen to be listening to it. Every review helps more people discover the show at no cost to you. Welcome back, everyone. On today's episode of the Damage Report, we are going to go a little bit lighter. It's been a rough couple of weeks. I think we can all agree that. Even our grammar has been rough lately. So we've been talking about the Supreme Court and all that. We're going to have a little bit of Supreme Court for you, but it's going to come a little bit later on the show. Before that, we're going to have a little bit of fun with the Beto O'Rourke, Ted Cruz Senate race, a new ad that hopefully will shake things up a little bit there. We're going to demonstrate a little bit more of Sean Hannity's hypocrisy on Kanye West. You'll be shocked to find out that he has not been incredibly consistent on certain things. We're going to talk about Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez's recent call to radically change the Electoral College. We're going to talk about how that might look, whether it's actually possible. And then things will get a little bit serious again, because we're going to be joined by volcanologist Jess Phoenix, recent congressional candidate, who's going to talk to us about the recent IPCC climate change report from this week. She's going to break down some of what it tells us, what we can possibly do to avert some of the worst consequences that this report are warning us about. And then we're going to close out the show a little bit later on with some good news. I've looked into the polling, and I have some reasons to be positive, so look forward to that. Along the way, J.R. Jackson's in studio.
What are you talking about? Close the show with good news. We're starting the show with good news. J.R. Jackson, Wednesdays.
We're starting the show with mildly good news. We will close it with awesome news. So look forward to that. But you had been saying that you were interested in this story, so we're not just covering this story. We're gonna lead with this story.
Man, this is
but
serious.
Pure, only for you. Normally it would be like a hurricane or something, because mm-hmm. there's a really bad hurricane. Did you know, coming to Florida? It's the third worst, apparently, in terms of strength, on record. There was in 1992, there was Andrew's worst, and then there was one in like 1934. Other than that, this is the third worst ever.
You libs exaggerate everything. I mean, why is it every hurricane is somehow the top five worst? You know how that might be? Because every hurricane somehow exceeds the last in how mm-hmm. severe it is.
You know
somehow
what?
That could possibly be true.
Maybe we'll talk to Jess Phoenix about that.
Okay, we'll see.
But we're not getting serious, though. We're starting off with something a little
Sorry.
Bit lighter. Okay, so Beto O'Rourke is running against Ted Cruz in the Texas Senate race that's going to happen in it's just a couple weeks now. And it could not be more consequential. Like, if Ted Cruz gets knocked out in this, that would be amazing. It would go 15 to 20% of the way to restoring my faith in this country, I think, if that were to happen. And Beto O'Rourke has an opportunity if he campaigns right, because so far he has been putting soft in his criticisms of Ted Cruz. He's been going super soft. But a director, Richard Linkletter, he's come out with an ad attacking Ted Cruz. And I want to show it to you, because this is how I think the tone that should be struck by Beto O'Rourke, as you'll see.
Somebody left something on my door the other day. It said, Ted Cruz, toughest Texas. I mean, come on. If somebody called my wife a dog and said my daddy was in on the Kennedy assassination, I wouldn't be kissing their ass. You stick a finger in their chest and give them a few choice words. Or you drag their ass out by the woodshed and kick their ass, Ted. Come on. Ted.
Political ad paid for by FTC PAC, not authorized by any candidate or candidate's committee.
That almost could not be more fun.
No, everything was right. Oh. Everything was done absolutely perfectly in that ad. Even down to the last graphic where they used the smug look. It was an outline graphic of Ted Cruz's face with the cross through it, the X through it. Yeah, it was everything that epitomizes who Ted Cruz is and what people really do think about him. Remember that bacon wrapped gun?
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't even an ad. It was some like little side
thing. Promo video that he did
with someone. And
he put a strip of uncooked bacon around the barrel of a rifle, fired it a bunch of times so the barrel would heat up and cook the bacon and eat it.
Said,
don't do that, by the way.
Yeah, machine gun bacon, because I'm really authentic. Everyone knows how fake Ted Cruz is. Everyone knows how much no one likes Ted Cruz in his own party. Many of them have said it. So all you have to do is say the obvious. This is what's so simple about this. You talked about how Beto has been soft on him because, I don't know, he thinks he wants to rile up some of his voters. His voters don't like him. They don't like him. They do it because they're like, well, I mean, this is what we got. I mean, he's going to do whatever he wants, right? Mm-hmm. Oh, and he's going to kiss Donald Trump's ass. Cool, we'll do that too. They need an option. Give them a full option. Don't let them not know who you are.
Sorry, as you're talking, a B-roll of Ted Cruz came up and I had to see his face. Man, they chose those pictures carefully. Yeah, I agree. So I think it's going to be difficult. The polling has been good so far. A number of polls over the past month or two have made it seem as if Beto O'Rourke is within striking distance, occasionally maybe tied, but he might be down by as much as 7 or 9 points. It is still going to be difficult.
Absolutely.
Do not get overconfident
Absolutely.
About this. But I do agree with you that Ted Cruz, at least in my experience, and I don't live in Texas anymore, to be fair. I haven't lived there in a number of years. He doesn't seem to me to be the sort of person that's going to inspire way more turnout from Republicans than whatever you would consider the default for that election. Right. I think that they will vote for him. You know, they probably, you know, he's their guy. They voted for him, you know, for a bit. But I don't think he's going to, like, whip people up into a frenzy. The only, maybe if Republicans are worried about losing the seat, then they might come out. But that's more about control of the Senate than about Ted Cruz specifically. I do think that you cannot simply, like, we would love to say, just campaign on the issues and say, I support this. And yeah, all that's good. And you should do that. And I want to move to a country where that's all it takes to win. But you do have to take this MF-er down. And this ad, I think, is a good demonstration.
Bake it into it. I mean, this is the thing. There's a way that Republicans fight. They talk about, by the way, based on falsehoods. They talk about all these things that are character things of people, who they are, where they came from, how they wore this one time, and how they said this one time to someone else. They bring it all up, and they always get away from the actual agenda. Hey, go through your agenda. Go through your points of view. Talk about how much better your policy is versus Cruz's for Texas. Mm-hmm. Then talk about how much of a piece of garbage he is, because he's both of those things can be true. Yes, you can attack him for their character, and yes, you can also talk about your policies as well. Yeah. We don't have to separate the two.
Yeah. Yeah, and by the way, like, Beto, he's a good candidate in a number of different ways. You know, he's relatively charismatic. He's good on the issues. People seem to like him. You know, he's young, he's popular, and all that. I didn't 100% love the way he presented things in the first debate that I covered with Brooke a few weeks back. I thought it was good, but not amazing. And so he has been blessed with a guy who has opened himself up to so much criticism in a way that few candidates get that opening. Like, Ted Cruz just reeks of weakness. And not like, you know, 10, 20 years ago. Like, he looked terrible in this last election that we had. Donald Trump, who Texans definitely like more than they like Ted Cruz, mocked him mercilessly, and Ted Cruz attacked Trump a bunch. Use both of those to attack him. Just show all of his, you know, show him calling Trump a sniveling coward. Trump voters in Texas are not going to like that. Show Trump saying that Ted Cruz has never accomplished anything for Texas.
Absolutely.
Like, maybe he wants to take it back now, but he said it then, and they believe that Donald Trump is authentic and always tells the truth. So if you use his words against him, it will work well.
Say it over and over and over.
Exactly.
And, over again. And you know, there's this feeling that you're going to alienate.
We need to talk about a relatively new show called the Republic, or UNFTR. As a Young Turks fan, you already know that the government, the media, and corporations are constantly peddling lies that serve the interests of the rich and powerful. But now there's a podcast dedicated to unraveling those lies, debunking the conventional wisdom. In each episode of the Republic, or UNFTR, the host delves into a different historical episode or topic that's generally misunderstood or purposely obfuscated by the so-called powers that be. Featuring in-depth research, razor-sharp commentary, and just the right amount of vulgarity, the UNFTR podcast takes a sledgehammer to what you thought you knew about some of the nation's most sacred historical cows. But don't just take my word for it. The New York Times described UNFTR as consistently compelling and educational, aiming to challenge conventional wisdom and upend the historical narratives that were taught in school. For as the great philosopher Yoda once put it,
"You must unlearn what you have learned."
And that's true whether you're in Jedi training or you're uprooting and exposing all the propaganda and disinformation you've been fed over the course of your lifetime. So search for UNFDR in your podcast app today, and get ready to get informed, angered, and entertained all at the same time.
Democratic voters or liberals or whatever you want, progressives, because you're being too mean to someone. Oh, man, they like highbrow conversation. Sure they do. But you know what else? The people forget that liberals, progressives, they're also Americans, too.
Mm-hmm.
And we're raised in the same country. There's a certain level of, like, gut-wrenching, like, I want to beat their ass type of approach to things that, yeah, they like. There's like when the gun issue, people like to say, oh, man, you know, we're going to keep those guns for our conservatives. do you know that liberals have guns? Somehow that's an obvious fact to me, but somehow they think that liberals like look at a gun and go, no, they want common sense ways to control people being murdered egregiously in the streets. So you can't buy into the BS that we've always been taught about the difference between each kind of person in our country.
Yeah, agreed. So great ad.
We like Lil Brown too.
Yeah, we do. And by the way, you know what we'd like? To be back in power in any area of America, because we have none, basically. Side note on that, the Republicans, their thing now is to talk about how there's left-wing mobs, they're too dangerous to rule, they're harassing conservatives everywhere. Like, they are the ultimate victims, even though they now control the White House, the Senate, the House, the Supreme Court, most of the governorships, most of the state legislatures. Can you imagine how they're going to act when they don't have all the political power in America? Jesus.
The only thing left is the citizenry who's now there attacking. Like, yeah. I can't believe these people, Americans they call themselves, want to tell us what to do. How dare they?
Yeah.
Now, so the disdain for the people that they're supposed to represent is at an all-time high. Just listen to what they say. It's all you have to do.
One other thing I want to say, though, too, is obviously that's a character actor. But what's amazing is how different accents, like you automatically assume things about people, like some negative, some positive. So when he says, Ted, he calls my wife a dog, like there's like an authenticity we assume to that. Like, oh, this is a guy who is definitely being honest, that you just sort of read that into the accent.
Yeah.
And then I think about like the accent that I have just because I was born in Connecticut and raised there. And I think it's all negative. There's nothing cool that you get from that.
Yeah, there's something you don't say, and he said, my daddy. You don't say that as a grown man if you're from, like, you know, that's a southern way, local way of saying your father, my daddy.
Yeah, I would say my papa, perhaps. But no, there's nothing, no good qualities come from my papa. Anyway, we're going to take our first break. When we come back, Sean Hannity has an opportunity to be consistent on a very specific criticism of Barack Obama. Let's see if he takes it after this. Welcome back to the Damage Report, everybody. We were having a debate immediately up until this intro that then he just walked out of. Anyway, so JR is still in the room. JR is still in the room because he wants to actually talk to me. So JR, thank you for staying in the room. Anyway, we're going to go on with the podcast. Let's move now to Sean Hannity, I guess. So you might have heard recently that Kanye West, who is now like one of the biggest Republicans of the country, I guess. I don't know. I don't really follow music. He's going to be having a lunch with President Trump. Might actually be happening today, actually. And during this lunch, they're going to talk about prison reform and gang violence. And that is something that right-wingers are very happy about, as you'll see in this clip.
The president is getting some very public, enthusiastic praise from one of America's most iconic rappers. Kanye West takes a stand for freedom of thought and freedom of expression. We should all support this.
Okay, so rapper's gonna be in the White House. He's gonna be talking with the president about gang violence. You know, the sort of stuff that would be in like a Kanye song, I guess. Again, I don't really listen to songs for a while.
Hooray, he's not shutting up and rapping because they've never said that.
No, they're very excited about having him. Now, what's interesting is that generally when we wanna make the case that X person is being hypocritical about Y issue, it's always like a little bit of a stretch.
Yeah.
Because, you know, you don't get almost the same exact situation. But sometimes you do, actually. So can we bring up this? This is from 2011, I think. Sean Hannity, Obama back to his radical roots with Common Invite. Yeah, so that was a result of Barack Obama, the president, having Common, a rapper, to the White House to talk to him.
To talk
back
about
to
what?
Radical roots.
Do you know what Common was in the White House for?
What was he in the White House for?
Common was invited to White House. Maybe it was multiple times, but I know there's definitely one point when he came for a poetry and an art night.
For poetry.
So he goes because he's an artist. Mm-hmm. And he came with his art. He writes and he performs. So he came for an artistic evening of performance and inspiration. And that was a problem. You know why? Because he's black and he's a hip-hop artist. Mm-hmm. And those are very loud dog whistles to their audience. Like, hey, you know that the black president had a black rapper who once said bitch in his songs?
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, that word would not be acceptable most programs.
You know
actually.
What that means?
Yeah. Now you might think maybe Sean Hannity doesn't know that what Common came back in 2011 was to do poetry, but no, he did, because Sean Hannity said this. This is not the guy that you invite to the White House for a poetry reading. This is not the guy we want our kids to listen to. And presumably because Common has had lyrics that are aggressive or violent or about drugs or God knows what. You know, he's an artist. He does hip hop. You know who else does? Kanye West. Kanye West has said crazy things and continues to up until very recently. Did his newest album come out? I don't think it did. Wait until it does, if it hasn't already. Again, I don't know. I don't listen to music. But well, it is going to have some aggressive lyrics
in it. Aggressive lyrics might be like, oh, freedom of thought.
Yeah.
What else? What was he telling me? Freedom of thought and some other mindless phrase.
Freedom of expression. Expression and that's thought. What it is.
And he talks about your Second Amendment rights. That's what he talks about in the new album. No, he doesn't. He uses all those words. You want me to quote a few? I can.
Just be careful which ones you quote, because
I can quote the really filthy ones if you want me to.
No. I think keep it not too bad. What are you gonna say?
No, I'm not gonna say.
Okay, then don't do it. But yeah, I remember something about Bleach. Look it up. It's rough. And Sean Hannity doesn't care about that, obviously, but he was really incensed, not just about Common, but by all these sorts of people, and not just Sean Hannity, by the way. Bring up this headline from back in 2011. Fox News calls Obama's birthday party a hip-hop barbecue. So they were pissed off that Charles Barkley, Chris Rock, and Jay-Z were there. They didn't like that. Of course, they left out that Tom Hanks was there too, and Nancy Pelosi. So to give you an idea of how wild and crazy a black barbecue this was, they just don't like the idea that the White House is going to be filled with some people that are African-American. And also rappers, until they support a Republican president. So with Kanye, their defense is what you saw in that video. It's self-expression. So Common doesn't have self-expression. He doesn't express his own thoughts and like, it's obviously ridiculous. And as a larger point, and I don't really, at the end of the day, I don't care too much about Sean Hannity. I certainly don't care about Kanye West. But what I do care about is this new narrative. And that is the free speech, free expression narrative that is now a get out of jail free card for literally anything the right wing wants to do. Any racist or misogynistic or Islamophobic thing they say, if you criticize them, hey, it's free speech. You can't criticize me for that. Even though you, in criticizing them, are exercising your free speech. For some reason, you don't have it, but they do. And if there's hypocrisy, that is going to be their explanation. We want someone who is speaking his mind, is willing to go against the grain, but not Common. Like Common doing a poetry reading, what, that just perfectly goes in line with every guest that's ever been in the White House? No, of course, it's different. That's why they were doing something different. But for some reason, that doesn't count as free expression or free speech.
So it's weird. I've been trying to look up Kanye West's accolades to talk about prison reform. Mm-hmm. And violence in Chicago. I don't see his academic background on this.
Yeah.
I'm still waiting for the. So the articles say he's going to discuss prison reform and violence in Chicago. He also went there in December of 16 to discuss multicultural issues. What came of that?
I don't know.
This is all a bunch of window dressing to be like, hey, you know, so I had this black guy coming off into the Oval Office, and we talked about violence in Chicago because Kanye's from Chicago. Oh, we talked about prison reform because Kanye knows everything about prison reform and our prison systems. Whenever the TMZ guy asked him one too many questions, Kanye walked away and said, you know, I'm going to look that up, which cool. If you want to educate yourself on things, I love it. Do it. Mm-hmm. But don't come forward and act like you're an expert before you educate yourself on those things. You know what I'm not going to go into the White House and talk about? Prison reform. Even though I do know things about the prison system, I'm not an expert on enough to go and talk to the president so he can do nothing about it, by the way. I do know people who are experts on it. I would actually encourage them to go and speak to him about it. Because the things they'll say to him, he's not going to want to hear.
Yeah. Well, look, I disagree a little bit. I mean, I'm not opposed to Kanye going. Yeah,
absolutely.
I don't think he has.
What's he going to do? What's the good?
Probably nothing. But that's why.
So why is he there?
I, at the same time, I'm not opposed to it and don't really care. Maybe like with Kim, some small thing will change. I don't know. And if it doesn't, I don't really care. It's one less hour that Trump is going to spend watching Fox and Friends.
Yeah,
what's the difference?
Because
it's executive
time. This is the reason why. This is the usefulness of minorities in America. By
no, I know exactly what you're saying, and I do agree. Nothing will come from it. And I would say
something
that if it
will
was
come
any,
from it.
What's that?
Cover. Like, hey, I had this black guy.
But I don't
in the
think
office,
so in this
Oval
case
office,
because
so, you know I'm not a racist anymore.
I look, Sean Hannity will say that certainly, but the fact that it's Kanye West now, I think people are on to that in particular.
That's what this is?
That this is not an actual representation of him making serious outreach to the African American community or respecting.
You know, Trump supporters will say that.
They go with the list of
you know where black unemployment is now? Do you know where Hispanic unemployment is now? Hey, do you know that Kanye went to the Oval Office to do what?
Yes, they will.
To give you this stupid ass talking point is what it is.
Yes, and to get a new hat, I guess. I do just want to reiterate, because you're going to hear it constantly. It's, you know, that's the main message from the intellectual dark web and now from Sean Hannity, because there's no distinction between these things, Fox News and these supposed free thinkers. Free speech, when they say it, means absolutely nothing. It only means, if anything, is that they are attempting to deceive you about something. Generally, it's about the value or quality of the thing that they're saying. They want you to believe that them saying something that's awful is deeper in some way and more valuable, that should be protected more, that these people are being censored. Not if they're actually banned from doing something, if their literal platforms are taken away, not that they're barred access from someone else's, it's a private entity. But that if there's any criticism whatsoever, they're being censored. And that is, of course, ridiculous, as we have pointed out. If you have the right to say something absolutely awful, something racist or misogynistic, I have both the right and, I would say, the values obligation to speak out against it. And so in the future, expect that this idea of free expression, free thought, is going to be used to protect more and more awful, not just thoughts and not just words, but actions as well. That is their cover against any criticism whatsoever for what they do and what they say. Okay, look, why don't we go to our next break? When we come back, AOC's got a new plan, has to do with the Electoral College, incredibly significant for future elections. And we're also going to talk a little bit more about some of the sort of structural rigging of the way that power is distributed in this country on the other side of this break. Welcome back to the show, everyone. A little bit later on the show, we're going to be joined by Jess Phoenix. We're going to be breaking down the IPCC's climate report. I just randomly saw during the break a little bit of good climate news. The World Bank has apparently confirmed that they will not be providing financing for a coal plant in Kosovo. That is apparently the last coal plant that they were considering financing. So it seems, based on the initial reporting I'm seeing, that the World Bank is out of the industry of coal, which is certainly good news. It's still possible that some other organization might finance it.
Many other banks are like, oh, an opportunity has arisen.
Perhaps. But that is good, because the last thing we need, considering the news has come out this week, is yet more functional coal plants. With that said, let's jump into something slightly different. Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez has been incredibly outspoken on a number of issues. Issues that, for someone who hasn't even yet won office, even though she's incredibly likely to, you wouldn't expect an incoming freshman congresswoman to do. This is including, you know, her proposed Marshall Plan for Puerto Rico, the Green New Deal, and now reform to the Electoral College. She tweeted this: "It is well past time we eliminate the Electoral College, a shadow of slavery's power in America today that undermines our nation as a democratic republic." So I look forward to right-wingers that have never read a history book in their entire life attempting to break down every part of that. The part that I'm interested in is the call to abolish the Electoral College, which we didn't want to bring up for a while, because I know everybody says you can't talk about it after a presidential election, because then it's just, you know, sour grapes or whatever. Okay, well, it's been like more than a year and a half. We're almost exactly as far from a presidential election in either direction as you can be. So, hey, JR, I think we can talk about it now.
I think so.
What do you think?
This is the question, but of course, there'll be a new reason. I mean, just like the whole thing about what Mitch McConnell has been saying about nominating, or actually putting through a nominee for the Supreme Court during election year, it changes slightly. Then latest, after he changed it, he said, oh, well, you know, no opposing party that's been in power would ever put forward a Supreme Court nominee of a president that's in power. I mean, that's what I meant when I changed it just now. So now it'll be a new thing. Can I predict? It'll be, well, you can't talk about Electoral College right before midterms, because then you're talking about the upcoming presidential election in 2 years about your midterm election. There's nothing to do with it. Why are we talking about it now? Let's talk about the actual midterms. Mm-hmm. It's always to be shoved aside, which I was thinking. Maybe he should do it in December. Mm-hmm. Bring it up in December. So that is the dead zone.
Yeah.
Right there.
Yeah. Okay, well, then we're getting close. I'm almost as far as I can be. Okay, so I think this is very interesting. Look, I at various points have, you know, I understand the historical arguments that are given for support of the Electoral College. They're certainly interesting. And if you have this sort of veneration for what the founding fathers were able to accomplish, you know, longest standing democracy, blah, 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 all that, then some of these traditions might just seem like, well, yeah, obviously we need them. If we were to take out any of these things sort of in the foundation of our democracy, maybe the entire thing could fall apart. But I am convinced that this is not one of those things. The actual arguments provided at the time before the creation of the Electoral College are, I would say, objectionable in their own right. But they don't even bear on where we're at right now. There was a really interesting editorial, I think, in The Week about this, about how it was inherently an anti-democratic thing that instead of voting for a president, you vote for people, presumably, who are better educated and knowledgeable and less, you know, I guess, inflamed by the passions of the times. And they will choose the president. So that if the people vote for an insane person, they could overrule that. That has literally never happened. So now, yes, a president has won the Electoral College, but not the popular vote. But not because the learned electors decided to go against what the people were voting for. The only reason it is possible at this point that you win the Electoral College, but lose the popular vote, has nothing whatsoever to do with the inherently anti-democratic idea of better representatives choosing for you. It is only because of the bizarre system of apportionment of electors between the small states and the large states. And because a place like California, for instance, I think that the gap between the populations of California, the largest state, and the small state, which I think might be Wyoming, don't quote me on that, whatever it is, it's 64 times. And yet, because of the way that we apportion both senators and thus electors, they are given a disproportionate amount of influence. Now, in the case of one state, it's not gigantic, but when you have a couple of dozen small states, it certainly adds up, enough so that you can become president. And again, that is the Electoral College producing an outcome that is not what in a pure democracy you would want. But again, it's not doing what they said the Electoral College should, in the worst case scenario, be able to accomplish. It has nothing to do with that. It is just a bizarre consequence of the way that we have given power to small states over big states.
We're electing presidents based off of the 1700s. Keep it real, you know? So when we talk about representative government, it's a very simple series of questions you can ask anyone who still believes we should still do this. And say, well, do you believe that, say, the voter who thinks we should continue with this, do you believe that your political point of view is the majority representation of the country? Because people would always think that. They're like, hey, this is the will of the people. Anyone who's actually elected someone is like, this is the will of the people. This is what the people want. Do you really believe that? First, ask that question. If you believe that, then do you believe that your point of view is what the majority of Americans agree with? And that's the way things should go. Like, we can continue. This is your level of whether or not you believe in the idea of America and representative government. So if you go, sure. You should be on board to eliminate the Electoral College because there's nothing to worry about, right? Mm-hmm. The majority of Americans are going to vote your way because the majority of Americans agree with what you believe. If you don't believe that,
you seem to think that.
Yeah, once you want to shut down the Electoral College, that means you are afraid that the majority of Americans actually don't agree with what you believe in. Mm-hmm. So there has to be this car accident of logic in your thinking. Like, no, everyone agrees with me, but I actually still think we should be represented by the minority of the major amount of people in the country.
And there's two other weird things about this. One is when, especially after this last election, people generally frustrated with the fact that the people didn't get what they actually voted for, that he lost by more than 3 million votes, but still ended up becoming president. The counterpoint from the right is, and Trump has said this at rallies many times, oh, well, if you don't count California, he actually won the popular vote. I don't even know what you're trying to say. Or if you don't count the big cities, he actually won the popular vote. But here's the thing. California doesn't vote in presidential elections, and cities don't vote in presidential elections. People do, and a lot of people live in cities, and even more people live in California. That point makes as little sense as any utterance about politics that has ever been said in American history. And yet it is something that you see Republican politicians, Republican pundits, sons of the president spreading on Twitter. The idea that our country is founded on is that people should have representation. And we also have this idea, working in tandem with that, that one person should have one vote. Now, that hasn't always been the case, obviously, in a couple of famous examples. But I think that we can get back to that principle, at least in presidential elections.
Well, those states across the top of the country that Hillary didn't visit, Michigan, Minnesota, maybe Wisconsin.
North Dakota.
Yeah, those states right across that we've always talked about. So imagine if Hillary Clinton comes out after losing and goes, you know what, if we just didn't count those states that I didn't go to, I would have won.
Yeah, it makes as much sense.
The mocking that would ensue rightfully over that comment doesn't happen the other way for some reason. Yeah. So you go, oh yeah, if we just don't count California, because what's California, not America?
Yeah.
Somehow we can dismiss what we deem as liberal bastion states, but then if you say anything about the South, be like, well, you know, the South tends to vote this way or think this way or have these kinds of laws, you go, how dare you talk about the heartland? Why don't we get as upset? Like, how dare you talk about the major cities in the country?
Yeah.
Why can't we get this upset?
It's bizarre. It's one of those weird imbalances. I'm going to go slightly over because I want to make one other point. The reason that I'm concerned about the Electoral College is not just that the way we choose presidents means that you can effectively win while still being in the minority, that the winner doesn't always win. It's that this is just one of the, I guess, foundational planks of a system that has become inherently rigged against what the people actually want. And it exists on literally every level, certainly the most important one. So with the president, you can win thanks to the Electoral College, even though you lose by millions of votes. In the House, thanks to gerrymandering across many states, Republicans who have the majority by a good bit in the House right now actually received far fewer votes. That disparity is even worse in the Senate, as we have pointed out. California has two senators for dozens of millions of people, whereas some states that have 250,000 people have exactly as much representation. That's the way it's always been, but it certainly doesn't look good in practice. So the presidency, the Senate, the House, and thanks to these other disparities, also the Supreme Court. Because if a president can get elected, even though he didn't win the majority of the vote, and it's senators that vote to confirm Supreme Court nominees, even though they don't represent the majority of the people, you have a Supreme Court that does not reflect the will of the people. So right now, with George W. Bush and Donald Trump, two presidents who got into office initially by not winning the popular vote, they have four of the nine Supreme Court justices were nominated by them. And in the most recent case, Kavanaugh, the polls show that the people were strongly against Kavanaugh. And yet you get an unrepresentative Supreme Court because you had these other systems that rig the political outcomes that we get against the will of the people.
That's what's crazy. You see that as a bad thing. Many of those folks that are in that situation see that as, oh, that's great. Our minority actually controls the majority of everything that goes on in this country. That's what they like.
Yeah,
it's
un-American,
literally un-American.
Yeah, and they will fight to defend it, and that is what they are doing right now. But thanks to AOC and others who are bringing up things like this, hopefully we can get a little bit of progress and help to rebalance the scales a little bit so that if the popular will is moving in a direction, and by the way, a reasonable direction, we're not talking about like wanting to start a genocide or something like that. Yeah. We just want representation on things like healthcare and jobs and taxes, things like that. We need to make a lot of progress to right the things in this country. With that said, we are way over, so we're going to take a break. When we come back, Jess Phoenix, volcanologist, is going to join us, help break down some of the science behind the IPCC's recent climate change report, get an idea of what is coming in terms of our climate after this. So earlier this week on the Damage Report, we were breaking down some of the initial information coming out of the IPCC's gigantic climate change report. But I am admittedly not an expert, not a scientist by training, just a political scientist, which is scarcely one at all. So we decided to bring on an actual scientist. And we're joined now on the Damage Report by volcanologist Jess Phoenix. Jess, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me, John. Good to be here.
We're very glad to have you here. You've obviously had time now to digest some of the findings from this report. For those who don't have a background in science, what are your main takeaways from it?
Well, you know, actually, as dire as the report is, they actually were pretty conservative in what they were saying has already happened and what will happen. They went conservative, I think, because of how resistant certain folks in our current government are, because, you know, the United States does have a lot of weight to throw around in this area. Basically, things are worse even than what we had thought a few years ago, and we are not on a path to making them better. Yeah. I want to bracket that by saying we actually can make it better, but it does take a large amount of political will and regular people actually deciding to make it a change, you know?
Yeah, I do want to return to that, but you brought up the some people in our government that might not receive a more strongly worded letter. Donald Trump was asked about this report and he said, I'll have to take a look at it, see who drew it. There are some reports that are fabulous and some that aren't. What does your gut say? Do you think that it's likely that Donald Trump or our government in general will take seriously this conservative report?
No, I mean, they're not going to take action on it because they're so beholden to fossil fuel industry folks, and their wealthy donors who have a vested interest in seeing fossil fuel consumption continue as it has. And of course, the big lie here is that fossil fuels are heavily subsidized. So they already aren't a really economically viable way or environmentally friendly way of doing business. But, Trump et al., that's sort of their game plan. And even though they know for sure that climate change is real. We've seen a few different examples of that, but they're not going to act on this. And as long as we have the Trump administration in power and the complicit Republicans in Congress calling the shots, we really have to lean on states and the private sector and local people to do the right thing.
So one of the things that's bothered me in, I guess, the popular response to this information whenever it comes out about climate change is that many people seem to think that climate change is a thing that is one day going to happen. In 30 or 70 years, all of a sudden, it's going to get really bad, when obviously it's a far more gradual thing. So based on what we see right now, if we don't drastically change our course, the course that we're on right now, in 10 or 50 or 100 years, what do you see happening?
Well, we've got some pretty scary eventualities that are coming down the turnpike at us. And one of those is if we hit that 2 degrees Celsius of warming, which is about 4 degrees Fahrenheit. It doesn't sound like much because you could have a 4 degree temperature difference in your house and it wouldn't bother you. But you're also not an organism that depends on a certain threshold to live.
Yeah.
You're also, basically our oceans, I think, are the most scary prospect for what we're going to see. Because we're going to see sea level rise, even at 2 degrees, we're going to see several feet of sea level rise, which if you know that about 40% of the United States lives in a coastal county, that's a kind of a big thing. Yeah. And then you've got the fact that our entire coral reefs all around the world will die off at 2 degrees Celsius. That is a mass extinction. And that just has to do with stuff in the ocean. I mean, there's so many more ramifications and people don't understand that it's not. Climate change isn't one gigantic cliff. This is something that's tricky when you're a geologist like I am. You have to explain to people that the Earth doesn't operate on our time scale. It's not like Tuesday we're fine and Wednesday we're screwed. It's more like, okay, it's a collective death by a thousand cuts kind of thing. Yeah. And we really need to start getting it into people's heads what it will look like. So we have to start bringing in the vision of, like we did with, say, nuclear war, to get people to realize, hey, maybe we need to regulate the amount of nukes we have. We started to show apocalyptic scenes, and we did have scenes from Hiroshima and Nagasaki to freak people out, essentially. But I think that's what we haven't been doing effectively with climate, is we haven't been showing people the reality in a way that they can understand.
Well, hopefully at some point they'll start to understand the link between climate change and extreme weather events, because that could be the sort of footage maybe that you're talking about. But I get criticized a lot for my environmental coverage being too negative, too pessimistic. So I want to turn to more positive or productive steps. So you had been talking earlier about what needs to be done. So let's say hypothetically Donald Trump gets kicked out of office tomorrow. We somehow get President Bernie Sanders and he puts you in charge of the national and indeed international response to climate change. What would you do to put us on the course to avoid the worst of these effects?
Well, obviously, I would want to eliminate all the fossil fuel subsidies right now, all of them, because you know what? If your industry can't make it and you're actually harming people, you don't need a little handout or a big handout. So that would be a big step nationwide. But then also, I would really want to take the approach that the United States government took when we tackled the Dust Bowl, which was a massive environmental issue that was partially, natural and partially human caused. Because the way that we dealt with the Dust Bowl was the government listened to scientists. I know it's a novel concept. And then they actually went into local communities and worked with the populations to say, here's what we can do at the local level. So whether it's, revamping how we do transportation, whether it's, teaching kids in schools about having a meatless Monday or whatever to ease the burden on animal agriculture, whether it's tree planting programs, there's a lot we can do. Right now, the only message that seems to get through is recycling. But in reality, there's a lot of other choices we can make that are going to have big impacts, even that are cheap for people, because not everyone can afford to say go buy an electric car.
Yeah. So really fast, we only have a little bit of time, but what leaps to your mind as a few things that viewers of this show can start to do to try to contribute?
Well, like I just mentioned, people like to jump on me because I'm vegetarian, but I actually chose to be vegetarian for many different reasons. And I'm not saying everybody has to be vegetarian or vegan, but if you can just think a little bit more about what you're eating and how much of it and where it comes from, the burden that we put on our environment to produce food is actually going to be a big climate issue. We're going to see food scarcity become a bigger problem because of climate change. So if we can shift our habits now, say, don't eat meat one or two days a week, or cut back on the amount of meat or dairy that you consume. That's an easy one. Also, there's, you can line dry your clothes. I know it sounds kind of hippie-ish, but it does actually save some electricity, save some energy. Insulate your house as well as you can if you own your own home, because that'll actually make things a little bit easier on our power grid. And of course, buy from companies that say they are supporting renewable and green and carbon neutral initiatives.
Wow. Okay, very helpful tips. Thank you so much. And thank you for joining us on the show. Jess Phoenix, volcanologist, we appreciate you joining us and lending your expertise.
Thanks for having me, John. Anytime.
Thank you. Okay, we're going to take one more break. When we come back, there has been a narrative going around since the Kavanaugh nomination having to do with what the midterms are likely to look like that I think is not actually backed up by the data. We'll break down why after this. Welcome back, everyone. We only have like 5 minutes left, but we have to get to important information because, look, when Kavanaugh was being nominated and when he was accused of multiple sexual assaults, which he almost certainly did, but we're just moving on. I guess he's there for 30 years or something. That's weird. The right says that they are very fired up over this process, that the left was going too hard against Kavanaugh, that SJWs are scaring people, and that is firing up Republicans. So in the past few days, you've had Donald Trump saying this multiple times. You've had Chuck Grassley and Mitch McConnell and lots of other Republicans saying that they had been having trouble firing up their voters and the Kavanaugh fight has done it for them. And I know that even people here at TYT, I remember hearing, I'm not going to name names, but people were saying that they saw initial polling showing that the big gap in the generic congressional ballot between Democrats and Republicans had shrunk down to almost nothing thanks to this Kavanaugh thing. Totally. Well, there might have been a poll that showed that. That's certainly possible. But I am here to say that this narrative that the fundamental numbers in play for this midterm have not dramatically changed. There's a new CNN poll showing that 54% of likely voters are planning to vote for the Democratic candidate in their House district compared to 41% backing a Republican. That is, we've done the math for you, it's 13 points, which is about what it was at 2 weeks ago and a month ago. Now, do not take any of this as allowance to be apathetic or saying you don't need to be concerned. A 13-point lead can go down. There are still weeks. God only knows what's going to happen. That is a generic thing. That does not mean anything necessarily about control of the House, let alone the Senate. So you do still have to be concerned, but we also don't have to simply accept at face value bizarre statements about the course of public opinion.
Yeah, the thing about a gullible voting bloc, which Republicans a lot of times get the opportunity to represent, is you can make things up and they'll believe it. You can say, hey, guess what? You guys are now energized. Mm-hmm. There's so many more of you that love Kavanaugh so much. And many of them are like, I wasn't one of them, but I guess there's others.
Yeah.
So they'll buy into it because they need something. No matter what the numbers are, no matter what the actual reality is, you can just say, hey, that's actually good for us. You should be energized. Or not you should be, you are.
Yeah.
It's not asking people what they believe, it's telling them what they are. And then when it's bad news, just say fake news. When it's obviously in your face, factual bad news for you, say, hey, that's just fake. You know who said it? Again, we talked to Jess Phoenix about the dire climate change we have coming towards us right now. And then Trump was asked about that report, and he goes, I'm going to look at who drew it up first. Mm-hmm. Not, I'm going to look at it and see what details and information I may find from scientists. I'm going to look at who drew it up, because I'm looking to destroy who it is that wrote it rather than actually look at the facts.
It is the most American thing these days to look for reasons to not have to pay attention to facts. And that is what he's going to do. Now, this narrative that we're fighting against in this little segment is not just about them thinking that they're going to do better in the midterms than they actually are. I think there's another reason that they're trying to make people think that the Kavanaugh fight has fired up a lot of Americans. Mm-hmm. is that they are worried that people's respect, or I guess the legitimacy of the Supreme Court, is going to be damaged by the fact that they've put a guy on there that is facing at least 4 charges of sexual assault. They don't like that, and so they want to make you think that, okay, maybe you don't like him. Maybe you think he might have done this, but you're kind of weird. You're an oddball. The rest of America all loves him. Now, the polls don't actually show that. He started off being unpopular even before the sexual assault stuff, and he remained the least popular Supreme Court nominee, I believe, in recorded history since they've been doing polling over it. That remains the truth. So do not allow yourself to feel like you're some sort of weirdo because you think that this is an absolutely horrible thing that happened. They want you to believe that. It's not true. Man, Ruth Bader Ginsburg's got some big shades. Jeez. Whatever helps her. I want to jump to the third graphic. We have very little time. Interesting extra fact in these polls. Nearly 2/3 of registered women voters polled by CNN said they're likely to vote for the Democrats this year. A 30-point gap between support for Democrats and Republicans. That is absolutely huge. Now, I don't know for sure if that has been affected by the Kavanaugh thing, but it's not a huge leap in logic to say that it might have been.
Absolutely.
The Republicans have been very clear about what they think of women lately in this country. Okay, with that said, I wish we had more time. Unfortunately, we don't. JR, thank you so much for joining us. JR Wednesdays. That was some good news for you. Yeah, there you go. Thank you for watching, everybody. Tomorrow morning, much more. We'll see you then. Thank you for listening to the Damage Report podcast, the show covering the true threats facing our country and what you can actually do about them. You can support this free podcast by leaving us a review and giving us a 5-star rating on Apple Podcasts or wherever you happen to be listening to it. Every review helps more people discover the show at no cost to you. Thanks for listening to the full episode of The Damage Report. Support our work, listen ad-free, access members-only bonus content, and more by subscribing to Apple Podcasts at apple.co/TYT. I'm your host, John Adirola. I'll see you soon.